Thought for today. Pursue happiness. It eludes you. Be loving. Happiness finds you. Pursue happiness. It eludes you. Be loving. Happiness finds you. When we pursue happiness, it eludes us. But when we're just loving, happiness finds us. How often have we chased after some dream of ours? How often have we, as a practitioner, spoken our words so powerfully and said, "You're home perfect, you're home perfect, you're home perfect," just with every ounce of our energy, with every fiber of our being, we have spoken to pursue the happiness that we wanted, to pursue the joy, the fulfillment of wholeness, of abundance, of right action, of truth, of exoneration, of whatever area we're working in. How often have we pursued it? And it eluded us. It eludes us. It seems to slip away from us. It seems to pretend that we're not even making these statements. It's saying that the law of cause and effect doesn't work. It's saying that the principle has nothing upon which it is founded. When we pursue these things, we're like saying we don't believe in them. We have to pursue it. This is much of what our whole life is about. Our whole life is about the idea that we feel we have to chase after something to accomplish it. We have to get in there and work hard to make it happen. If we don't use every ounce of our energy, it's going to do it. Now, let's look closely at that aspect first. If I say, "You're whole and perfect," and I say it from the depth of my heart, it is done. Now, from the depth of my heart, where does anyone know where the depth of their heart is? If I say, "You're whole and perfect," and I mean it, I believe it, I know the principle works, I know it is done. Now, if I say to my dog, "Come here, love, come here," and I have not trained him to come here, he does not come here. He just looks at me and smiles. If I make a gentle, kind noise, come, and like that, see, right away Button looks up. Yeah, that's me, Button. They pay attention, and I say, "Come, come, you know, come, come, Button, come. Hey, Button, come. Hey, Button, come." I got his attention, but I don't have his action. He lays his head down. He says, "I know you're playing games with me." Even Love, he sat up too, but he lays back down because he knows it's just a game. Now, if I train my dog, and I train him to come when I snap my fingers, I had a schnauzer called Gus, and I trained Gus to come when I'd snap my finger. I didn't really want to go whistling all the time for him or something. I just snapped my finger, and he would instantly come. I would snap my finger, and he would stop doing what he was doing. If he was going to walk somewhere, go across the road, or do anything, I'd snap my finger, he would stop. I'd snap it again, and he'd come to me. He knew that that was what it was. Now, he didn't think I was treating him like a dog. He didn't think I was treating him like some ignorant being. He thought those were our little secret codes that we had between us that informed him of what my desire was. And he had but one desire. He had but one desire, and that was to please me. He had one desire to make me happy. He had one desire to fulfill my expectations of him. I trained him. I trained him. It was over a period of time. It was over a period of months. I would walk back and forth in the field behind my home in El Centro, where I had the church in El Centro, and I had this beautiful swimming pool and my apartment and everything else. It was just wonderful. And every morning, I'd get up and I'd take Gus out for a walk. And he's just a little shrimp. And he would roll along like a ball behind me sometimes, and sometimes he would walk nicely. But month after month, I trained him. And within a period of time, he began coming without the leash. And I'd say, come, come, Gus. And he'd come. I'd say, Gus, sit. He'd sit. I'd say, Gus, lay down. He'd lay down. I'd say, Gus, pray. He'd take one paw and put it over the other paw, and he'd pray. Gus did what I asked him to do because I took the time to train him to follow my suggestions, my requirements for him. Gus did what I asked him to do because I took the time to train him so that he knew what to do. Gus took the time with me in training, and he learned, and he followed my suggestions. Always, to the end of his days, he did that. Now, you say you'd like happiness in your life. You say you'd like peace, harmony, joy, abundance. You say you'd like freedom. You say you'd like many things. That's fine. That's just fine. Now, have you trained yourself in what it means to be happy? Do you know what it means to be happy? Do you know what it means to be in peace or peaceful? Do you know what it means to be abundant? Do you know what it means to be whole and perfect? Well, if you don't, how can you speak your word for it? Because whatever you speak your word for is what's going to happen. And if you don't know what happiness is because you've never experienced it in your life, or if you only know happiness under certain experiences, then that's all you're going to know. As a man thinketh in his heart, whatever you believe about yourself, whatever you know about yourself, that's what you're going to experience. Okay. Now, what is real happiness? Real happiness is defined differently by all people. How do you go out and train yourself in happiness? Well, you say to yourself, I am going to look at Ellen and I'm going to see everything she does as happy. I'm going to look at Sylvia and see everything she does as happy. I'm going to look at Sylvia and see everything that she does as happy. I'm going to look at Sylvia and see everything she does is happy. I got her attention. I'm going to look at Anita and see everything that she does is happy. I'm going to look at Ingeborg and see everything that she does is happy, right? I'm going to look at John and see everything that he does is happy. Now, we look at John and we say, oh, what a happy fellow. What a heart full of joy. What a blissful, wonderful fellow. Well, he's working on it. Why do you think John tells all these happy stories? Why do you think John tells all these happy situations from his world? Why do you think John creates so many humorous experiences out of life? Because you teach best what you most need to learn. In other words, within us is happiness, but we have to realize it's there. We have to, as the early pioneers would say, prime the pump. We have to put a little water down the pipe to make a little suction so that when we start pumping, it'll come up. And then it keeps coming up and keeps coming up. And when we let go of the pump handle, it all goes down again. So we have to prime it again for the next time. But if you put a little stop valve in there, which keeps the suction intact, then when you pump it, it'll go automatic. How do we put that little stopgap in there so that we don't have to prime the pump every time we do it? Well, let's take the first step first. The first step is you have to prime the pump every time you can do it. Can you prime the pump and have it work every time? Yes. As long as there's water down there, and there's water down there. Can you prime the pump and have it work every time? Yes. Can you prime the pump and have it work every time? Yes. Can you prime the pump and have it work every time? Yes. You see, this is something we are training ourselves to realize. When we prime the pump works. Makes sense? Okay, now. So John, being a creative, wonderful, fantastic guy, has decided that he is going to maintain the pump in a primed condition. Now, how do you maintain the pump in a prime condition? Well, to prime the pump means you pour fluid down into it so that it'll cause the suction to come up. So John felt, okay, I am going to put a valve down there that only lets water come up. It doesn't let water go down. So when I bring up the last load of water, it will maintain a prime condition. And then when I start pumping, it'll already have suction in it and be ready to start pulling it up after a few pumps on the handle. Now, am I manipulating the law? Am I manipulating the principle? Am I manipulating the technique? Yes. You are manipulating it the way it was designed to be manipulated. The pump works on suction. The pump works on being primed. So if you maintain the pump in a primed state, then it will work every time you start pumping the handle. Now before, it took you 5 minutes or so to prime the pump to get the water going down there and pumping away and pumping away, and finally it came and you had all the water you wanted. You always had all the water, but it took time. I'm home perfect, I'm home perfect, I'm home perfect, I'm home perfect. You have to know what home perfect means. Not that you have to know that every organ, action, function of your body is perfect, that every little cell is doing its right thing. That's good too, but you just know the concept of being home perfect. John knew the concept of priming the pump. Now, the pump needed to be primed. And Sylvia came along and needed to prime the pump. Sylvia had no water. So what does Sylvia do? She goes into the refrigerator and takes out a bottle of wine. And she pours it down the pump to make suction. Is it going to work? Sure. The water will taste like wine for a while. But is it going to work? Sure. Where'd she get that creative idea? She got the creative idea, it takes fluid to do it. It takes fluid to make the pump be primed. The pump doesn't care whether it's champagne or water or whether it's urine or whether it's anything. It only cares that it has something to prime it to cause suction. Do you understand me? You see, sometimes we say, oh, it can only be the purest of water. It can only be this. It can. No. Now, so much for the pump. Let's go to wealth. We would like to be independently wealthy. We teach, I am independently wealthy. That's a lovely statement to say, I'm independently wealthy. Like happiness, we pursue it. And so we say, I'm independently wealthy. Now, how do we prime the pump with being independently wealthy? We prime the pump with being independently wealthy by counting our blessings. Oh, you mean I'm home perfect and I'm this? Well, that's good too. But let's count our blessings on what we think of wealth. What do we think of wealth? Do we think of wealth as a wealth of ideas for writing our book? A wealth of talent for doing painting or doing plumbing or cooking a meal? Do we think of wealth as being M-O-N-E-Y, money, dollars? Do we think of wealth as what? I love Ellen. Ellen said to me, Carol Oliver from the Guyanas, she said that our students are paying for their lessons very beautifully, and we now have $30 million on our account. And I thought, hey, that's cool. $30 million Guyana money is quite a bit of money. It's not $30 million in U.S., but it's a lot of money. And then I happened to see the note on which Carol Oliver wrote and said the money had been deposited, and it was $30,000, not $30 million. But it's 30,000 Guyana dollars, which is perhaps the equivalent of maybe $1,000 or something like that. But 30,000, not 30 million. Now, why was she thinking 30 million? Well, that's where her consciousness is. She thinks in millions. Is that bad? That's very good. But think in that. Now, if she believed her misapprehension that it was 30 million instead of 30,000, could it be so? quite likely. If she hung with it, now she mustn't tell anybody. She mustn't tell anybody that that's so, because when she does, you know, we don't tell people what our financial program is and so forth, because we don't want people's ideas on it. Oh, they got lots of money. Oh, they're poor. Oh, they can just barely make it or what have you. We don't need that from anybody else. We are our own creator. You put the water in the pump to prime it. You alone, not somebody else. If you have somebody else come along and prime your pump, you're going to have somebody else come along and prime your pump every time. Just as a slight diversion, I have a computer. And every time something went wrong on the computer, it needed attention, I'd say, Sylvia! And Sylvia would come running over and take care of it, and it would work. Gregor! Gregor would come running over and take care of it, and it'd work. Or anybody else. But what did they do? They did nothing except the simple, normal thing you do to make it run. And it's nothing that I couldn't do either if I did it. But it was much easier calling to Sylvia. It's much easier not taking responsibility for our own circumstances than it is to take responsibility, we think. But here I am working on my computer. And it's a Sunday, and Anita has taken Sylvia and everybody else out for a ride on the horse, and they're all gone. And my computer doesn't function. Sylvia, where are you? And she's not there. So I have to do it myself. So I figure, okay, what did Sylvia do? And I say, Herb, shut up. You don't give a damn what Sylvia did. You must think this through yourself. Don't go say, what did Sylvia do? Because Sylvia may have some little techniques that are special to Sylvia and don't necessarily work for you. So, okay, this program is not functioning. You run your virus check, you run the various things, and it gets cleaned up there, and it still won't work. So then you take the program and you rerun it. You put it on the hardware and a hard disk, and you run the program again. And then, lo and behold, it works. Or, like our mentor says to us, when everything goes wrong, turn off the machine. Have a cup of coffee, come back and turn it on, and it'll work. Why? Why does it work? Because he said it will. Should it work? Well, perhaps it's just sort of reorganizing itself when it's shut off. It reorganizes itself when it shuts off. Well, yes. It's just like if you have a magnet, and you have the magnet at the bottom, and you put magnetic iron particles above it, and then all of a sudden the iron particles just go to forming the picture of the magnet below the iron particles. Well, maybe in a computer it's the same thing. All of the pixels fall into their right place when the machine is shut off. It says, I am saving everything in its right order. And everything is now in its perfect order. And then, when you turn it on again, poof, it starts up as though it had never been started before. Now, that's a belief. That's a condition. It doesn't work for everybody. I told Daniel, I turned it on and off 5 times and nothing happened. Still didn't work. Daniel turns it off once, turns it back on again, it works. He believes in it. He knows that that's the way it works. Then he explained to me what happens when you turn it off. And when you turn it off in the proper way. Oh, yeah, I see. So now, every time I've been having great trouble with it, I usually shut it off. Like yesterday, I told Ellen, shut it off. Let it set for a few minutes. Then turn it on. She did, and it worked. You see, we have to train ourselves in these things. If we pursue happiness, if we pursue these things, what are we doing? The possibility runs away from us because we don't even see the ability that stands right before our eyes. We don't even see the manner in which it works perfectly right before our eyes. It sort of eludes us. Sylvia was sitting at the table the other day, And she says, "Will you please pass the honey?" And everyone is snickering a little bit. And so she says, "I'd like some honey." And so we passed her some honey, and sitting right in front of her place was another bottle of honey. And it was so close to her, she didn't see it. She always thought it should be floating around the table. Everything she wants is somewhere else on the table, so that's where it usually is. But you see, we get a habit of thinking that way, and so then we don't look in front of ourselves. We don't see it. We don't put the principle in motion to accomplish the goal that we want. So, when we say, "I'm independently wealthy," we have to know what independently wealthy means. You may have all the dust in the world in your room. You may have all the problems in the world in your pocket. You may have all the lack, all the limitation, all the ill health in your world. I mean, you're abundant. You are really abundant, but not really what you had in mind. The way to have abundance in your mind is to think abundance, to visualize it all day long. Think of what it is that makes you happy. Think of the delightful people in your world. Think of harmony. As we were saying, John is working on being a happy fellow, so he spends most of his time telling happy things, telling happy jokes, telling happy experiences. Now, if you want happiness in your life, spend your time thinking about happy experiences. If you want abundance in your life, if you want independent wealth in your life, think about what abundance means to you, and then take out your blessing book and see how many things in your blessing book have spelled out abundance for you. See how easily it works. See how wonderfully it works. Every one of you has experiences in your blessing book where abundance has come to you that was unexpected, where good has come to you that was unexpected, where lots of things have come to you that were unexpected. Flow with it. Recognize it. Know it. Okay. In our last few minutes, let's take the thought, "I am a spiritual master." Only needs a couple minutes. I am a spiritual master. How do we demonstrate that in our life? We all are spiritual masters. Everyone in the universe is a spiritual master. That's a foredrawn reality. Now, that we don't recognize it, that we don't know it, that we're not using it, that we're not calling it forth, that is also a foredrawn. How do we experience being a spiritual master? Well, we look at everyone as beautiful. Number one, we look at ourselves as our creation. Number two, we look at everyone else as our creation. And if ourself is our creation, did we create ourselves with all of the benefits that we think we should have, all of the assets we think we should have? Did we create ourselves with happiness, joy, peace, harmony, abundance, health, and all the other good things? Or did we create ourselves with some limitation? If there's any area where there's a limitation, for instance, your limitation is in friends. And so you say, "Yeah, I have lots of friends. I have lots of friends." Well, in that area, you be what?
Everyone.
Yes, but more. You be a desirable being that friends want to be with. You be a happy person. People don't want to be around unhappy people. You be a happy person, and friends, quote, unquote, will flock to you. You be a joyous person. Friends will flock to you. You be a witty person. Friends will flock to you. You be a wise person. Friends will flock to you. And real friends. But if you think that you're stupid, you think that you're a wallflower, you think that you're nothing, friends don't want to deal with, people don't want to deal with people who have a low opinion of themselves. You know that. How many people, though you might love them and want to help them, how many people do you invite to your house for dinner who have a very bad opinion of themselves? If any, not many. So, you want to have abundance in your life. You want to be a master. How can you be a master? You are a master by speaking about yourself as a master would be. How does a master look at anybody? How do you look at yourself? I'm whole and perfect. Every organ, action, function of my body is whole and perfect. I say it constantly. I know it. I know it. I walk my path. I speak it. I know it. And then I'm a master. How do I treat to be a master? I treat to be a master by saying, I am a master. And as a master, I do not judge anyone. I do not need anything from anyone. I'm giving you the negatives right now. I do not want anything from anyone. As a master, I have everything, I am everything, and I am delighted in myself. I live in this harmonious, fantastic, beautiful way. You follow that? You follow that? I live in this harmonious, beautiful, and then you are a master. You are demonstrating that which is within you, that mastership quality, which is so beautiful. That mastership quality, which is your reality. But you cannot have your mastership unless you let it out. Little boy brings home a present for his mama and says, Mama, here's the present. And she says, oh, how wonderful. And he said, well, you can't see it now. Why not? Well, this is for your birthday next week. And she says, oh, my, I'm going to be so curious. No, Mommy, you can't look. You cannot look until your birthday. But can you give me a hint what's in there? You think it's a little kid asking, but Mama's asked too, you know. Can you give me a hint? Well, it's something very special. Now, the little boy forgot that when you put a frog in a box and you leave him for a number of days without any water or without any food or anything like that, the frog is going to turn bad. He will die. And the mother knows these things. She knows that her son does give gifts of such a nature. And so she said, well, Freddy, today is my happy on birthday. Freddy says, oh, a happy on birthday? Yeah, this is the day I received my presents on my happy on birthday. Oh, are we going to have a cake? Oh, yes, we do. And as soon as I open my present, I will make the cake. Oh, good. Well, you can open it now. And out hops Mr. Frog. But you see, this is the gentleness in knowing, not the guiding or the judging of the child being stupid or something, but the intense knowingness is a master knowing, the gentleness of knowing. A human being is not a human being. A human being is a mechanical thing. A divine being is what we'd like to think of a human being. A divine being is gentle and caring and loving and sensitive and understanding. A human being has the other qualities that we don't need to mention. Why do they say man's inhumanity to man? Because that's the human attitude, where everyone tries to take whatever they can for themselves. The divine being receives it or not, everything is theirs. The mother knows by her sensitive caring how her son operates. Now, are you ready to pursue happiness? It'll elude you. Or are you ready to be loving and let happiness be part of the package? Are you ready to be a joyous, beautiful, fabulous person? Are you ready to be the master that you are? You think a master is not happy? A master is very happy. You think a master is not living in their eternally perfect ideal spirit, mind, body? Oh, yes, they are. You think a master is in any way limited? Not at all. Who is limited? Only those who pursue something they don't believe is theirs. Only those who are pursuing something that they don't even recognize is already theirs. And if you say to somebody something, here is your gift. Oh, not for me. Oh, no, I just, if you don't need to give me anything. This is how we respond to the principle. We say, oh, you don't have to give me anything. You don't have to tell me a funny story. You don't have to tell me that I'm abundant. I go around saying, hey, gorgeous, how you doing? Me, gorgeous? You must be talking to somebody else. Never deny a compliment. Never deny anything that you know to be true about yourself. Always accept it. And when you accept it, you build this consciousness. You're training your dog to come when you call him. You're building this consciousness within yourself to fulfill your desires for yourself. Are you ready to do that? Are you ready to be the master? Are you ready to live in perfect happiness? If you are, then you'll be loving, and you'll be wonderful, and you'll be fabulous. Pursue happiness and it eludes you. Be loving and happiness finds you. I love you.